disasters and emergencies happen to good people like you every day. The frequency of these events are increasing at an astonishing rate. Now is the time to take responsibility for preparing and empowering yourself for the inevitable. Welcome to the Survive University Podcast, where we provide an education in preparation, giving you the tools to get ready, be ready, and stay ready. Now, let's get on with today's lesson.
Listen up, my preps. Welcome to another episode of the Survive University Podcast, where we discuss research-based solutions focused on preparation for protecting your life and your health during an emergency or a disaster. Our topics cover all things survival as we discuss with industry professionals on how to help you triumph over the toughest times in your life. I'm your host, Hakeem Isler, with co-host Maine, the OG, aka the Ordinary Guy. On today's episode, we are talking to my friend and owner of Vigilance Combatives in Aberdeen and Combatives Champion, as well as retired Special Forces combat veteran, Sean O'Dowd, as he shares with us the truth of what it really means to be a gunfighter. Now, turn on your ears and put on your thinking caps. Class is in session.
Pew, pew, pew.
Pew, pew, stand by.
It's going to be a good show today, guys. I have a lot of questions for this guy. I've seen him do training events before. He's very personable, and he breaks things down on a level where it's very manageable for individuals like myself, the ordinary guy. I don't know where you met this guy, Hakeem, but you know, I'm looking forward to this one today.
All right. Yeah, me too. Me too. Sean and I met at range 30 or PSR 37.
That is correct.
And you know, because he's such a humble guy, I did not know the extent of how he was. You know, like when you meet Clark Kent and he's like, you know, just working at the paper place, you know, and then all of a sudden you recognize that all he did was take his glasses off and he actually is Superman.
Yeah.
So that's how it was when I met Sean. It's like, started to dive a little bit deeper into, you know, who he was and things he's done. And it really was amazing to me, to be able to be a part of that. You know, sometimes people tell me that I am X or Y or Z, or man, you know, all this stuff. And I always hold true to the fact that I am only a reflection of the beauty that God has put in my life for me to be in link and in contact with people who are just amazing individuals. So if I am anything, it is just a culmination of just being in a pool of amazing people. And so Sean is one of those people, so it was great to have him on today. But I would like him to introduce himself. He's done so much. He's won like competitions, and he's been deployed many times, and he's been on, you know, he's had crazy amount of contact with enemy forces in different countries. I mean, it's just so many things. So, Sean, can you please introduce yourself?
Sure. So, first of all, just thank you so much for having me. Anytime I get to spend time with the legendary Hakeem, it just makes my day better. And so I'm real glad to be here. Real hopeful to bring something intelligent to this conversation on what it means to survive and what that looks like. So I have a weird story because I did not advertise this a lot growing up, but I grew up in France, so I was born in France and came to America when I was about 5 years old. And so that's not really a super important part of my life till I joined the Army, because obviously everybody thought that I was going to be a cheese-eating surrender monkey. So I had to really fast learn how to fight well and change that reputation around. Again, growing up, pretty standard life, I guess. I was in Hermosa Beach and out in Southern California and then out in Santa Barbara for a while. Started doing martial arts in 1988, doing some karate. Karate Kid was huge back then in the 80s. I'm sure you watched it too.
Yes.
Influenced a lot of us to want to get into that stuff. And messed around in karate for a while. Transitioned over, started working on Aikido because that was a big thing. Steve Seagal movies were coming out. Everybody thought Aikido was cool. Wasn't quite my cup of tea. Ended up on the high school wrestling team. As I was wrestling, I went, you know, wrestling is awesome and I enjoy rolling around, but always wanted to get back to strike fighting. Messed around a little bit doing some Tang Sudo, Subak Do. Spent a tremendous amount of time in different dojos just kind of looking at things, and had an uncle who was a Marine, and he would tell me stories about Vietnam. And my grandfather, who was in the French military during World War II and then in the resistance later. And so I grew up to hearing all these stories about the military. And I went, well, I gotta get out there and prove myself. So joined the Army at 17 and turned 18 in Fort Polk, Louisiana in JRTC. That was a fun experience. Wow. And shortly after getting back from there, well, we all watched the planes hit the World Trade Center. And I was an infantryman at the time who thought I was going to do 4 years and get out and go do great things as a police officer or something like that, and realized, well, war is starting, and so now's really the time to put my money where my mouth is. And a couple weeks after that, ended up on sort of Lift One, Operation Enduring Freedom, and deployed to Afghanistan right at the beginning of the war, and that started all my adventures. So 20 years later, retired and started getting back into teaching martial arts, hoping to influence the next generation. So,
Wow, it's quite eventful.
Yeah,
quite eventful.
A lot of martial arts, a lot of combat experience. So I guess today's episode really is about what it means to be a gunfighter.
Sure.
And so I think that throughout my time, when I went to bodyguard school, when I was in the military, when I was out of the military and I was learning from different folks, you know, what I found is that there is a lot of misconception of what a gunfight will be,
yep.
how frightening it's going to be, how do you get to your weapon. And, you know, as a martial arts, I come across numerous amounts of people who are, you know, overweight, you know, couch junkies that
yep.
are like, oh, I don't need that kung fu boo stuff. I just shoot you in the face.
That's right.
And I'm like, you can't. Where's your gun? Where's your gun?
Yep.
You got to lift up your belly. You can't do that because you don't have enough muscle strength. And they just have this really false idea of what dealing with a pistol in contact with someone is going to be like. So what do you think a central part of survival is when you have a gun?
Yeah.
You know?
That's a fascinating question. So I think there's a bunch of parts to that I kind of got to break down. And to understand that, I think that predominantly the first thing that we got to look at is, what does that word say, which is gunfighter. And initially, you know, the first thing I always think about is that the word fighter is in there. And so there's a tremendous amount of folks who own firearms, and, you know, God bless them, Second Amendment right. It's a great thing. I'm glad they have them. But there's a tremendous amount of folks who are missing the fighter aspect of the gunfighter card. And so when we talk about gunfighters, you know, there's a misconception that having a firearm is just a discipline. But within the firearms community, there is a tremendous amount of different disciplines, just like there are in martial arts with the firearms. And so you can think about that from a perspective of, hey, are you a pistol marksman, or are you a long range marksman? And those are two totally different distinctions in gunfighting. You know, one of them is going to be very much based on immediate responses to threats that occur at the intimate distance. And the other one is something that involves a lot of strategy and math and computations and weather decisions and physics and all kinds of things. So, you know, just saying you're a gunfighter is kind of like saying I'm a martial artist. Well, the immediate follow-up question that I would always ask is, well, what discipline of gunfighting do you do? And I think that's an extremely relevant question, because first of all, you got to be a fighter, and then it's, what's the weapon that's in your hand? What is the weapon you're using? And you know, again, just like in any martial arts, well, maybe you're really good with knives and you're a Filipino martial artist, or maybe you're a boxer. Well, with gunfighting, there's a huge range and scope to what a gunfighter can be. But first and foremost, they've got to be a fighter, and they have to have that mentality.
Now, just so that people listening can know, And I can hear that same guy who talks to me about, you know, how he'll just shoot me saying, well, who is this guy that knows something about how to use a gun? I mean, where's he been? Yeah, he was, you know, so can you just tell us a little bit about your experience with fighting with a pistol?
Yeah, that's a great question and a great point. So let me kind of start with that. And so like everybody who joins the Army, I started off in basic training, and that was really my first exposure to firearms because I grew up in California and in France where guns really just weren't around. But I wanted to be an infantryman, and I thought, you know, those were the guys that knew everything about guns starting off. And so my first exposure to firearms and I guess I'll say Army fallacy was that the Army was going to teach me to be a gunfighter. When in fact, in basic training, all I learned was really basic rifle marksmanship. You learn, you know, how does a round travel and the four fundamentals of marksmanship that the Army's deemed necessary and those things. But you really don't learn the science of fighting with the gun. So what happened for me was right after I finished basic training airborne school, ended up getting put in the 82nd Airborne. And as a young private, found out they had this thing called the Scout Sniper Section in the infantry battalion. And I went, ooh, that sounds cool. I've heard of being a sniper. I want to do that. But, you know, very limited knowledge on what that meant. And so ended up in the Scout Sniper Section, and my first epiphany moment of how little I knew was the minute they gave me the long gun, and I got sort of my first crash course from my team sergeant at the time on all the things I was going to need to know about shooting this precision rifle system. And all of a sudden I went, oh my gosh, I don't know anything about guns. There's so much more to just point and shoot. That really got me into reading every book that I could put my hands up and put my hands on. It got me into, research. We didn't have the internet in the same capacity we have now. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't really YouTube to go look at and all these, you know, online experts who know everything because they saw it on a video. So the way for us to learn was we just started going to the range, and you're putting a lot of rounds down range. You're collecting your dope. You're figuring out what works, what doesn't work. And ultimately starting to figure out, hey, you know what, it's really cool that the Army taught me how to shoot standing, kneeling, and prone, but there's a lot more to hitting my targets when they're moving and all these other things, you know, being in a helicopter and you got vibrations and forward movement and down movement and rotor wash and all these things that start factoring in. I go, man, there's a lot of things that I got to start figuring out if I'm going to be good at my job. So, you know, that was kind of the beginning of my passion for firearms, and realizing the Army, even though a great place, doesn't necessarily understand all of the science of gunfighting. I mean, the Army is a major corporation that doesn't make money off selling stuff, but they have so many different echelons of what they do, and you know, gunfighting is a really small percentage of what folks in the Army do. Especially after September 11th hit and I realized I was going to have to go downrange to Afghanistan and, you know, go kill Al-Qaeda fighters at the time, I realized, you know, I needed to really step up my game on learning and understanding gunfighting. And really that first deployment, that was the first experience I had with having, you know, exchanges of volleys of fire, if you will, with an enemy that's trying to kill me just as much as I'm trying to kill them. And I had to really rethink what tactics look like to be a successful gunfighter. And, you know, I firmly believe God intervened on several miracles during that first trip because we didn't really know what we were doing at the time. That got us to a place where I started devoting all of my time from that point forward to figuring out how to be a gunfighter. And I'll fast forward, you know, several years later, I'm finding myself as what's known as an interagency operations NCO or non-commissioned officer. And now I'm in a totally different fight where I'm sitting in meetings with, the worst of the worst, trying to get information from them. And these meetings can go bad at any time. And now I'm in this intimate space, you know, one arm's interval, sitting down at a table with somebody who wants to kill me. And all of a sudden it's not, you know, I'm shooting paper targets from 25 feet away at a static range. Now I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to defend my life in an active gunfight from, you know, a foot or two away. And so all of these things kind of led to having to put an understanding together of, you know, what a gunfighter is. And then I'll just leave with this, you know, thought, but a lot of my ideas of being in a gunfight were, you know, me with my gun that I've taken care of and handled. And the reality of the situation is, you know, you get in a good 12, 18 hour long firefight, you end up going through, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 different weapon systems in the course of that time, that aren't necessarily the gun that you've been, you know, practicing for that moment on. So you're not an Olympic shooter out there, all conditions set with, you know, all the perfect, variables in your training and all the time in the world to take your perfect shot. You're in there trying to figure out how to defend your life on the fly, with whatever, you know, God put in your hands at that moment. And so that starts changing how you look at things.
Knowledge bombs. We tend to drop them a lot around here, and we appreciate your feedback and support for the information, interviews, and perspectives shared. Become a Patreon supporter for Survive University and get additional exclusive content not shared during the podcast. Patreon subscribers also get information on other Survive University products and projects before they're released to the public. So visit patreon.com/Survive University and join us as we continue on this journey to get ready, be ready, and stay ready like never before.
Now, one of the things I heard you say is your passion for guns. And as things transpire, you know, society changes and we go ebb and flow in different directions, there's been an increase in the number of guns that have been purchased. But you said passion for guns. And usually when people say that, there's a negative connotation. But you seem to come to it from a standpoint of a science, the science behind the gun, the science behind using the gun in the situation. It's not just a matter of intimidation.
Sure.
So who would you advise to consider purchasing a gun? There's a lot of people out there who grab them, but who would you advise as being the person who should get a gun?
Yeah, that's a great question. And so I'll start with this, is I think, you know, the average American absolutely should go out and buy a gun, but they're going to need a level of training with it. And I'll put it in this kind of visual context for you. But anybody here who stays up late watching infomercials has all seen like the latest and greatest, newest, coolest butcher knife that you can buy for your kitchen, and it chops onions and tomatoes amazingly. And then you go buy it and you go, this thing sucks. I can't cut this tomato. I'm awful. I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Well, you know, those folks they got in the commercials, obviously, they got a certain level of training with that tool, because ultimately a gun or a firearm is a tool. That's what it is. And so to become an expert with that, not only, you know, you might go out and purchase one off the cuff because you go, that's neat and I want one. But the next thing you got to do is start your training endeavors with it and figure out how to become a master or a successful, you know, tomato cutter with your butcher knife. And then you can really start, you know, doing pretty cool things that are just, you know, tremendous capability that you start putting in your toolkit that you can use when you need it. So it's not something you have to use all the time. I mean, most of us carry knives all the time as survival guys, you know, and we don't use them all the time, but then, you know, we got to open a box and we pull out our knife and we cut the tape off the box and open it up and we're real happy we had the knife right then. But you know, if you bought a butter knife, and you had no training, cutting that packing tape off the box is still not going to go great for you. You know, it's a question of not necessarily who, it's what you do after, the steps you take after you buy the gun that are important. And you might find that you bought the wrong gun after you do that. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, I think, you know, we grew up in a country in the United States where not too long ago, and a lot of people still have this in their memory, but you could buy guns out of the Sears catalog mail order. And somehow now they have this big negative connotation that wasn't there before. So I think it's more of a question of how did we get where we are on that negative feelings that we have towards firearms, because they've always been a part of our culture.
Mm. Yeah. And actually, that goes to my next question. Like I said, the difference between, because we watch movies all the time, and we would tell you spoke about Steven Seagal and, you know, the different movies that came out when we were younger. Everyone who's a cop or a criminal, they had a gun and they always had good aim.
Yeah.
And even and we went through phases like even in the 90s where you could shoot sideways and still hit people. So
while diving through the air.
While diving through the air in slow motion.
That's right.
What are some of the biggest misconceptions you've seen that are perpetuated through pop culture about firearms?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. So I think, you know, Misconceptions wise, the first thing I would say is when you buy a firearm and you go to try to shoot it, everybody just thinks, well, point and pull the trigger and everything will work out just fine. And what I would say is, hey, try that same strategy on a pool table. Sinking the A ball the first time you try, and you're gonna go, man, I gotta do a little bit of lining up, and Matt, you know, I can't just go up there and whack it like a baseball and hope all the balls go in the pocket. Mm-hmm. So from a misconception-wise perspective, I think there's a tremendous amount of folks who just assume, hey, if I buy a gun, all I got to do is point and shoot, and that'll solve my problem. And I will tell you right now, you know, even looking at it from a survival perspective of using a firearm to go get, you know, dinner for the night, you're going to have a heck of a time getting dinner if you think all I got to do is aim in the general direction and pull the trigger as fast as I can. So, that's a huge one. And then the other one is the fallacy that I see a lot of folks that have no understanding of what cover and concealment are and what will actually stop a bullet and what won't. And so I think that's a huge part to being a gunfighter is understanding, hey, what are the effects it's going to have of the round going the other way too, not mm-hmm. just, you know, going out but coming in. So that's something that I think movies has completely destroyed any reality in people's minds of what will actually, you know, help their survivability when somebody's shooting at them.
Speaking to both of you guys who've been in situations that where it has been a life or death situation and having that tool at your disposal and comparing that to what you see on a regular basis where the topic of gun ownership is a polarizing issue when, you know, in reality it's just a tool, you know, based on with someone who has an agenda. Good agendas have, you know, good outcomes, bad agendas have bad outcomes. But I mean, all being said, listening to somebody who's not only utilized a weapon but created a philosophy around it is really cool. I have a lot of friends recently who've purchased firearms, and I've purchased firearms in the past. One thing I found out from people who don't know a lot, they say it's addictive. It's kind of like a tattoo. When you get one, you want to get another one. And I think it gives them a sense of assurance that, you know, okay, they can handle the situation. But like you said before, training seems to be more important than the firearm that you purchase.
Yep.
So if I wanted to get a gun, taking myself into consideration, or get, you know, my mom wants to get a gun or my wife needs to get a gun, what should I do after I get it? Well, first of all, how should I assess what type of firearm I should get and what should I do after I get it?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think that's actually the best first question you can ask yourself when you're in the gun store looking at guns for the first time. So one of the things I see a lot is, and you know, I think name brand recognition is something that everybody jumps on the bandwagon with, and they're like, man, I'm going to get this Glock right off the get-go, or you know what, I need a subcompact because that sounds cool, or whatever it is. And so I'll give you a great example, and I'm going to, I love my wife to death, she's awesome, but at the same time, she was not aware of her limitations starting off, so she purchased a firearm while I was deployed, and calls me up the next day and goes, I just can't rack the slide to the rear and lock it to the rear. It's just not happening. And I go, well, what'd you get? And she, well, I got this subcompact Ruger, you know, LC9 or something like that. And I'm like, why'd you get that? And she's like, well, it had this super cool pink camouflage print on it and it looked cool. And I got this teal holster that goes with it. And, you know, so, you know, there's a lot of things. I would say before you buy a gun, the first thing you should do is take a basic introductory class on you know, pistols, if you're going out to buy a pistol or a rifle. And those things are important because you're going to quickly identify what the right gun for you is. So here's the thing. People ask that a lot and they go, well, what's the best gun? And I go, well, it depends on a couple of variables. First thing I'd say is, what's the best gun? Well, it's the one you have right now when you need it, because that's all you have right now. But the second part is, when it comes to what's the best gun for you, well, it depends, right? We're not all built the same. Some of us are 6'5" and 250, and others of us are 4'10" and, you know, are going to have different challenges. Our hand sizes are different and all that. So the first thing you got to do is you got to find a gun that is functional for you in your current capability. And so there's a dynamic of folks who want to get a Glock a subcompact or something, because that's what they've heard of. Mm-hmm. When really maybe they should be starting off with a revolver and learning how to deal with all the effects of recoil and all that stuff with a weapon. They don't necessarily have to struggle through spring tension and other problems on the weapon system with. So the first thing I encourage anybody to do before they fire a gun is get with somebody who knows what they're doing with a gun, not just your boyfriend because he said he knew what to do with a gun, because no self-respecting man is going to say, I don't know how to use this. But find somebody who knows what they're doing with it. And go take a class from them on some basic understanding of firearms. Understand what the difference is between a semi-automatic and a revolver. Understand, how they function, what a single action or a double action is, and what that does to your trigger pull. Those are all really important things to understand. It's kind of like, going to the car dealership and you've never taken a class on anything about cars, and you end up walking out of there with a manual transmission because the car was the right color for you. Mm-hmm. And you went, well, I don't even know how to drive stick shift, so I'm going to sit here and grind gears the whole way out of the parking lot for my first, 6 months driving this thing. So you're better off taking a driver's training class first and learning how to operate it and what works best for you. Imagining that you're just going to know how to drive a semi-truck when you're 16 years old and that you're not going to jackknife the trailer, it's not going to go well for you. Don't buy the semi-truck on day one. Figure out a class first and what works for you.
So basically, it's a level of commitment that you have to take when you purchase a gun or you decide to purchase a gun, because the gun is just a tool.
That's right.
And a lot of people feel that if I have a gun and I show the gun, that's going to end everything. Sure. And everybody's going to freeze and that's going to stop.
Yeah, and actually, that's a great point. There's two things I'll say to that, which is, A, sometimes showing a gun, brandishing a firearm, is actually escalating a situation that mm-hmm. didn't need to be escalated, and now you just turned something that didn't have to, go lethal or kinetic, and now you just made it become that just by showing your firearm. And then there's some states where you're going to end up going to jail for brandishing. So just carrying one around is not necessarily the right answer. And then, the other part to that is, just because you have the gun, and a situation has escalated to a point where you need to use lethal force, doesn't mean that right now is the right time to use it. And I'll give you a scenario about that, just not something I've experienced, but something I think about. But just imagine an active shooter in a school. You have kids running every which direction, and you're the person with a gun who's never done any training with it. And, our fourth fundamental of firearm safety, know your target and what's beyond it, because you and only you are morally, legally, and ethically liable for every round you shoot. Mm-hmm. Well, hey, there's a bunch of kids behind your target right now. Are you really going to pull the trigger and get the drop? And if you do, are you 100% confident you're going to hit your target? And if you do, are you 100% confident you know where the exit path of that round's going to go after it hits your target? And those are things people don't necessarily consider. I bring that up because I'm passionate about the training aspect of it. And the training aspect of it can't just be going to the range and shooting paper all the time, because that's not, being accurate with a firearm isn't the end all be all of being a gunfighter. That just means that, if I throw a cross, I know I'm going to hit you in the nose. Well, what if the other person blocks? All of a sudden there's variables to whether or not your cross is effective. Yeah. So you have to train to be a gunfighter. You just can't assume because you own one that you are one.
I like when you were saying that, I was thinking about, it's not the gun is the tool and it's the training. And I thought about this movie where Sylvester Stallone was in it. It was something about like they were hitmen or something. And this guy had kidnapped his daughter and he gets on the phone with him. And the guy's like talking about all this stuff. And Sylvester Stallone says, man, I'll kill you with a rock.
Yep.
And it was like, man, he just skipped. Guns, knives, yep. Swords.
Straight
he's
to the
like,
rock.
He's like, I'm going straight to the rock. But the tool doesn't matter what's in my hand.
Yeah.
It's that I have this mindset and I have this training, and I have the capability to be able to use this effectively. And people miss that. They think that I just get this tool and I put it under my bed and I never touch it again, and somehow magically, when a situation arises, it's going to, I'm going to do my little Naruto hand weaving, yep. And then it's just going to unveil out of the package and do all the work for me. No, you have to be able to do the work. You have to first put in the work, and then you put in the hard work, and then you have to be able to actually call that forth, bring it forth, for you in a situation. And that also is another level.
Yep.
Because if someone is coming at you, attacking you with aggression, or if they even have a weapon in their hand, it completely changes the dynamic of how your brain operates and how your body will respond. And so you have to understand those dynamics. And without a true understanding of that, then, you know, you're just kidding yourself.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because, you know, one of the things that I tell a lot of my students, we talk about whether or not shooting is a fine motor skill or a gross motor skill. And, you know, to assume that in the adrenal state, you are going to be able to execute complex fine motor skill tasks without ever having done any training is just an absolutely ridiculous notion, right? And you know, correlate it to being a five-year-old who's learning how to tie his shoe for the first time, right? It's not a fast process for him, but as we, you know, practice and get repetitions in, now at our age, you know, I can eat a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, answer the phone, text message somebody, and tie my shoe without even noticing I tied my shoe. But that's because I've tied my shoe every single day for the last, you know, 40 years of my life, and I know what I'm doing when I tie my shoe. But a six-year-old, you try to have him do all those tasks at the same time while somebody's screaming at him, and I guarantee you he's going to struggle to get his shoe tied. So, you know, just knowing that shooting alone is a fine motor skill, it's not something you can just default to. It's going to work great for me in the adrenal state when I have no fine motor skills. You know, that's a huge epiphany moment that people who buy firearms need to have.
So just taking the concealed weapon course is not enough.
No. So the concealed weapons course is actually... every state's is a little different, but it's a huge joke. It's not a marksmanship training program. It's a, can I say cover your ass course? What it is. Yeah. I mean, it's solely designed to teach you when and where you are allowed to use a firearm from a legal perspective. So, and you know, I haven't taken all 50 states different concealed carry classes, so I can't say all of them. But what I can say is that most of them are 6 hours of PowerPoint related to legal situations that you're going to find yourself in, and they do absolutely zero marksmanship instruction. And actually, again, not knowing all the states, but I can speak for North Carolina, the instructors are not allowed to add anything to the course because they want to make sure that it's standardized and you're not getting anything else. So they say, hey, here's the 6 hours and here's exactly what you must teach and you can't add to. You've got to hit every one of these points by the numbers. And here's the written test at the end that everybody's going to take. And then, yes, there's a qualification table at the end, which all that says is that you know how to pull the trigger and make sure your rounds impact generally in a safe direction from a very close range. And again, you know, that's not training on marksmanship. That's training to keep you out of jail. That's what that is.
Hey guys, there is a lot of information in this podcast episode, as well as all of our other episodes. We distilled down some of the greatest lessons from all of our episodes that we share with you. You'll find that information on our Patreon account, where we would like to invite you to come over for $4 a month. You can join our Patreon account. You can help support us, keep us doing this good work, and then also learn some valuable skills. If you're looking to get more education, get into some courses, join us at our SurviveUniversity.com website. Again, that's SurviveUniversity.com, where you can gain the knowledge that you need to really grow your survival expertise.
I want to ask you more questions about that, because I know based on our previous conversations, you know, before the podcast, you worked in law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And I think when taking a concealed weapon course, they tell you what to say, but they don't necessarily tell you what happens after the fact.
Yeah.
What are some of the consequences of using lethal force, you know, in a situation going into it even? I mean, because I know it's a life or death situation, but what are some of the consequences someone should consider?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, you know, consequences don't just range with, you know, potentially spending the rest of your life in jail, but you may have done everything 100% legally sound in accordance with the law. That doesn't mean you're protected from a civil lawsuit that might happen after. So anytime you're going to deploy a firearm, you immediately, you know, you need to always be thinking, hey, is what I'm about to do worth my house that I have, the roof over my head? Is it worth, you know, my income for the next 5 years? because it's not necessarily just go to jail. There's a tremendous amount of time and money that you're going to invest into the legal battle you're going to have after you've deployed your firearm. And you know, that's a consideration that's not always given. Just because you did the legally right thing does not mean that you are cleared from any moral or ethical civil liabilities that may transpire afterwards. So again, you know, you may have shot an active shooter and you're a hero on that sense. But then on the moral sense, that round may have ricocheted off a wall and killed a five-year-old, and now you got to go to sleep at night with that. So now it's not even just a civil lawsuit, but from a, you know, I'm going to lose sleep over that for the rest of my life moment. And you know, the worst time to go, man, maybe I should have got some training is after the fact, when you're experiencing those legal consequences or those moral emotional consequences that you're getting into afterwards.
So training, we talked about concealed weapons not being enough. What kind of training should someone pursue and research if they're interested in learning how to become proficient?
Sure. So again, I'm impartial because I run a school.
That's no problem.
So I can't say that I'm not going to be biased. But step one for me, you've got to train in something that is not three-gun competition focused. And I say that because there's nothing wrong with that. But that's like, you know, training to be an MMA fighter in the cage and then thinking that that's all going to transpire to self-defense afterwards, right? So it's a different thing when you're in a set ring with one other competitor and you're learning how to fight for points and glory and trophies and all this other stuff. It's another thing when you're in a crowded room with 50 people that are jumping on top of you. So when it comes to training, you got to train with a mindset of self-defense and not a mindset of competition. Now, although competition does breed excellence, and I think it's really good to get into the three-gun world, or it's really good to be a good you know, target shooter and all that stuff, I don't necessarily think that answers the mail on you know, the mindset you have to have. So I'm always going to advocate go to thecombatuniversity.com and take our courses, mm-hmm. Learn from Frankie McRae, learn, and I'll put it this way. One of the things that I advocate for a lot of folks will take training because it's done by a former retired law enforcement officer or something like that with a badge, mm-hmm. who's carried a gun their whole career. Well, I will tell you, most cops will do their entire career without even drawing their firearm. What I would say is go seek someone out who has been in a gunfight and ask them what did they learn from the gunfight they were in, because their mentality on it is going to be very different. And my casing point for that is if you watch the UPS truck shootout in Florida with all the sheriff's deputies that engage that UPS truck, well, man, they had zero concept of understanding your target and what's beyond, and zero concept of what's actually going to stop bullets. And a lot of people got shot that didn't need to that day. Mm-hmm. So again, you know, just because somebody has credentials from law enforcement does not make them a gunfighter. It makes them somebody who understands the dynamics legally of when to deploy a firearm. I would always say seek out somebody that has had some experience in an actual gunfight, and they will tell you some things that you didn't necessarily consider. So again, you know, I had one of the best coaches on the planet. I will always throw shout outs to Frankie McRae. You know, the concept of what they teach has to incorporate not just me shooting. It has to incorporate the bad guy gets a say. And it should also incorporate some medical training, and especially incorporate some hand-to-hand skills, because just getting your gun out is not going to be like you thought it was in the movies. Somebody is probably pounding you in the face the entire time you're trying to reach for your gun, or stabbing you. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of things that are going to be happening to you before you even realize. If I knew that I was going to get in a gunfight, I would already have my gun drawn, be kicking mm-hmm. in your door, walking in the door. Well, that doesn't happen. I don't have the authorities to go kick in your door and take you out, right? So usually you're getting in a gunfight when you are somewhere in the unaware state, and all of a sudden, pop, pop, things are going off all around you. Mm-hmm. And now you just have to respond to what happened. You didn't get to set the conditions for it. And those are really important things that we want to train towards fighting out of a position of disadvantage, not all the conditions were perfect around me, the wind was blowing just right, and you know, I got to line up my sights perfectly and handle business. You're going to be fighting from a position of disadvantage. That's what you got to train in.
Yeah, I have a point on that as well, and it comes from another friend of mine who's retired SF. And he said to me, Everybody trains to be the bat, but very few train to be the ball.
Yeah.
And basically it was just like, and his training, what he was teaching was he was teaching people this high risk, escape and evasion and stuff like that. And it was just really mind opening because we always want to be the winner. And so we train like, oh, I'm in the best condition and this is, you know, I know the rules and I'm going in this 3-gun competition and I know what targets I'm supposed to hit and what targets I'm not supposed to hit. And, you know, I can walk the lane and game it and all this stuff. And it's like you are the bat, but in the civilian realm, it's very rare unless you're in the movie with Tom Cruise, Minority Report, where you're like able to like see the crime before it happens and make sure you're there. You know, you're going to end up you may start as that ball, and now you have to respond from the ball aspect of it, and the whole perspective of the world looks different when you're looking at it from that view.
Yeah, that's a huge point. You know, I say this a lot, and I think it's relevant, is, you know, if the person who was assaulting you didn't think they were going to win, they would not have started assaulting you, right? Like, they're not, look at that guy, he's 250 and 6'5", I'm going to take him out. No, he's gonna pick on you because he thinks you're smaller, weaker, not paying attention, in the unaware state, and, you know, he thinks he's got the drop on you. So you're going into it against somebody who thinks that they are going to smash you in every sense of the form. So you've got to start your fight process thinking, hey, I'm going into this from a losing position. I'm already 10 points down in the game, and I got to make my comeback from there. So that's a huge, you know, training methodology that you should be training from. That I'm already losing right now.
Now, you mentioned basically before trying to get the training, trying to get the weapon. You've been in a lot of situations where I'm assuming where you had to draw your weapon, and it was a life or death situation. You've moved beyond the I just want to have a gun to defend myself or to feel empowered. At the base of, I guess, your thought process and how all the training that you have, how do you gauge whether you want to use lethal force or not?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think this varies drastically depending on whether, you know, this is something I was doing in official capacity, where you're going in to get a bad guy. That is something where somebody has given you permissions and authorities already to handle business, versus the other side, which is from the self-defense perspective of, you know, when is the right time? I don't have the permissions and authorities I have, or is this legal and am I doing it for the right moral reasons? And so you have to draw upon, you know, what is your line in the sand that you are going to defend? And, you know, I'll share a personal story with that. And this was my first interaction in the civilian world of drawing a firearm. And this happened in Los Angeles out in California. But my wife was homesick and she had asked me to pick up some chicken soup. And, you know, I'm coming home. And so first off, I was carrying concealed in California. And I know this is going on the air, so I'm going to say that I weigh my decisions on when and where to carry as a personal decision I make. Needless to say, I had a firearm at the time. I'll leave it at that. And I get into the Vons parking lot, which for those of you from the East Coast, Vons is kind of like Food Lion. And I'm going to get a can of soup. And as I pull in, there's, you know, maybe a 75-year-old guy who is just getting the bejesus beaten out of him with a tire iron by two MS-13 gang members. And you go, well, how'd you know they were MS-13? And I went, well, it was tattooed on their face, so I didn't have to think too hard. kind of made it apparent. But they're going to kill this guy. He is in bad shape. I see lacerations all over his skull, and he's not going to make it too many more swings. And I have no idea what the fight brought up. I know that in my concealed carry training, they said, hey, if you didn't see what started the fight, don't get involved because you may be backing up the initiator or whatever it is. But all I knew is there's about to be loss of life right now. It's an older gentleman that, you know, I highly doubt that at his age he was. So, you know, I made some assumptions in there, and I'm not saying they were right or wrong, but I knew I didn't want to watch somebody get killed 3 feet away from me while I'm parking my car. So I didn't immediately draw my gun. First thing I did was get out of the car, and I, you know, started yelling for compliance commands from him, you know, stop, get back. And as soon as I did that, the guy with the tire iron turns around and faces me and lifts the tire iron up. And he's getting ready to do what we call a caveman strike with that tire iron. So I go, well, I'm about to eat this tire iron. So I created some space, and I deployed my firearm, and I put him at gunpoint. And real quick, I didn't have to pull the trigger because one of them just took off and started running as soon as I did that. And the other one became compliant. So I put him down on the ground. And I'm calling cops on the phone while I'm holding them at gunpoint with one hand. And I let the cops know I got them at gunpoint, and the cops show up. And, of course, they all draw their firearms on me, so be prepared for that. So they secured the scene, put me in cuffs, did all the things that they should have done. I start telling my story. And this is California, though, so it's different. And I wasn't trying to be a hero. Wasn't my intent. I just didn't want to see a 75-year-old man getting murdered over a parking dispute or whatever it was. The paramedics said that dude wouldn't have made it too much longer if I hadn't done what I'd done. Because it was California, I was charged with brandishing a firearm within the city limits. So now I got a legal battle on my hands that I had to get through. So, you know, those are considerations. But for me, that was a moral line where I said, hey, I'm not going to let somebody get killed in front of me. I can't live with myself going home knowing I didn't interfere with something. Whether that was right or wrong, those are things that I'll have the rest of my life to kind of think on. But that was a situation where I made a decision that I needed to intervene, and I still feel like I made the right decision.
Cool. I heard you speak before about the importance for you of the three Fs.
Yep.
Could you give us a little breakdown of what the three Fs are?
Yeah. So when I start coaching people, I talk about, three different battles. The first one for me is always a spiritual, emotional battle, which means you've made a commitment to do something or made a commitment not to. And that's that spiritual, emotional battle you have to have. The second one is the physical battle, and the third one is the legal battle. And those are kind of self-explanatory. Well, the emotional battle for me, I went, well, what are my lines in the sand that are things that I'm willing to fight for? And, as I started meditating on that, I went, hey, I got three things that rank in this order that are things that I will always fight for. The first one is my faith. That is the most important thing to me. So I'm always willing to defend my faith. The next one on that is my freedom. So my freedom is a huge one that I will always fight for. And I took an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States. And I believe that, you know, we are a free country, and that freedom is fought from the blood of patriots that are willing to, you know, shake the tree from time to time. Well, those are things that I'm not willing to roll over on. And then the last one for me is my family. If anything is attacking or presenting my family, I will tell you right now that for all intensive purposes, I'm a pacifist. I don't believe in fighting. I don't have any reason. I don't care what somebody calls me. You're not going to hurt my feelings. I don't get emotional about a lot of things. But I know that if you attack my family, and somebody could punch me in the face right now, and I'd probably, hey, that was a good punch, you know, moving on. Nice job. Keep working on that cross, though, you know, whatever. But if somebody punched my wife, that would drastically change, where I'm at on my red lines. I think, you know, thinking through and understanding what your lines are something you got to do ahead of time. You don't have time to decide if I'm going to act now. When you're in the moment, you want to know what those responses you're going to have is ahead of time.
Wow. So that goes into training.
Yeah.
The confidence that you have in being in that situation is not getting the gun and putting it under the, you know, keeping it still in the new wrapper, putting it under the bed and saying, I'll use it if I need it. It's through the training and the discipline that you've understood, taking all the time that you had to master the gun. It's a situation where if you get in the get into a dire situation, you know, okay, this guy can yell at me, call me whatever he wants to call me. Well, guy, girl, I don't want to be gender specific, but guy, girl can call me whatever they want to call me, do whatever they want to do. But I know that I have mastery of the weapon because I have the training. So it's not a reaction. It's something that you've trained to do.
So a huge piece of that is, and I'll tell you, you know, from my perspective, there is a lot of times where you don't feel, if you are capable of defending yourself and of taking, you know, tremendous amounts of violence onto somebody else, your need to have some kind of ego to prove something just goes away. So, like, there's a lot of things that happen in today's world that result in violence that is completely unnecessary because it's driven by pride. And you know, if you're fighting, whether it's a gunfight or a fight over, you know, pride, you have probably chosen the wrong values to stake your future liberties on. And so when it comes to the training, a huge piece of that is understanding that when you train and you train a lot and you're proficient and you're a good fighter and you can walk in peace all the time, because I'm not a victim to whatever you're doing. I'm allowing you to do it because I've decided you're not worth my time. So, you know, you want to steal my wallet, you want to steal my car, you want to punch me in the face, you want to spit on me because you don't like that I wore a uniform or that I defended the country. It doesn't faze me at all, because at any moment I could stop it if I wanted to. So I don't get hurt by those things that happen anymore, because in my mind, I know anytime I want this to stop, I can make it stop. And so that gives you a certain level of peace that you can walk around in, where you go, you know what, whatever, I don't need to get my feathers ruffled over this. If I didn't like it, I'd stop it. So I'm gonna keep going on about my business. And I think, you know, training is the biggest aspect to that. It'll help you feel not as a victim, but as somebody who's, yeah, and you know, I don't want to get too preachy on this, but I'll use religion as an example. You know, Jesus told us to turn the other cheek when we're getting hit. Well, if you don't know how to fight, you can't turn the other cheek. The other person is making you, they are forcing you to give them the other cheek, right? Mm-hmm. So when I make a choice to turn the other cheek, it's because I chose with my freedom that I can defend to allow you to continue to do whatever it is that you're doing. But anytime I want to make it stop, I still have the freedom to do that. And then it becomes an actual choice. And then you can really live free and you can walk fearless after that.
So you're not one of those people that I'll see in, I won't say a specific name, but the grocery store or the big box store with the leg long rifle kind of pistol with, you know, a strap holster, looks like a crutch or anything like that. You're not that, you don't walk around brandishing your weapon.
So although, all right, and I think this is an important distinction. All right, I am 100% pro Second Amendment, and I don't hide it at all. And it is your God-given freedom here in America to walk around with whatever you want. But I will tell you that as somebody who knows what they're doing with a firearm, when I see that, I automatically know that you have zero level of training and you're relying 100% on creating an image in order to intimidate people from a position of power or perceived power that you have a firearm. But if I wanted your gun, I'd probably take it from you and use it against you just because you don't know what you're doing with it. And so, yeah, you will never see me like that. I will forever defend the right for people to walk around with their guns like
with
that.
With their guns.
Sure. Yeah. I don't think it's smart. Look, there's a lot of things people do that I don't agree with, but it's their right to do it. And I'm going to defend that right as long as I'm alive.
That's awesome.
Well, I appreciate you breaking down the perception of a gun ownership and gunfighting into a situation where it's like more training, it's a discipline like a martial art or anything else, or playing a musical instrument is something that you can work to master and perfect specifically because of the love of understanding it, not because you want to make someone feel like they're inferior.
Great point.
I have a story about something that kind of encompasses all of these. So I used to have an employee, great person, but at some point they just decided they wanted to start open carrying, right? But they didn't have any training. And I was just like, well, that's his right, and, you know, I'm not going to really say anything. I know he's got a good heart, and, you know, and I know where he's coming from. But one day he had this encounter where he was living with his best friend, who was a female, and her boyfriend in the best friend female's father's house. And across the street, the father also owned a house, but the house was vacant. And so one night, my employee was out on the porch with the best friend's boyfriend, and they were hanging out, and it was really late. And they see this car kind of creep up on the house, and it just stops there. And it's like, you know, 1 a.m. or 2 a.m. So they're like, this is weird. What's going on? So the car is just there for a long period of time. They can tell somebody's in it, but, you know, they can't see what's happening. And, you know, they don't feel threatened. They're just like kind of believing like, well, what's going on over here at this house? My ex-employee has this pistol on his side because he carries open carry. So they see the guy get out of the car and he goes around the side of the house. So they were like, oh, suspect. Hell no. We're going to go see what's going on. So, you know, my ex-employee gets up, he walks over there, and they go around and they see the guy on the side of the building, on the side of the house. And they're like, hey, what are you doing? And the kid pops up and he's got a hood on and he starts kind of walking towards him. So, you know, my ex-employee's like, hey, stop where you are, stop moving, stop walking towards me. And the guy was like, no, man, what are you talking about? And you know, my ex-employee says at that time he felt threatened. So he pulls out his pistol and bears down on the guy and tells him, you know, hey, you need to stop right now. You need to stop. And the guy was like, man, I was just, you know, smoking a blunt. I was smoking a joint back here. Yeah. And I was just trying to not be in my car. And the kid was like super afraid and all this stuff. And he was like, well, you need to get out of here. And so the kid gets in his car and drives away. And my employee, so I found out about it is because he posted it on his Facebook the next day.
Got it. Yeah, of course.
So the story. So I immediately called him up and was like, hey, you need to take that down off of Facebook. Oh, why? You know, this is my right. No. And I was like, no, you need to take it down now, you know, because you don't know where this is going.
Sure.
You know, if that dude comes back and says I was assaulted, you know, this guy pulled the gun on me. I was just helping, you know, protect my friend's father's property.
Sounds legit.
Yeah, it's not your property.
Yeah,
you know, we have law enforcement officers. Yep. Did you call the cops at all? Yep. Nope, you just walked over there, you and this other guy. So it's two of you, one of him, you pull out a weapon on somebody else's property. I feel like I can stand my ground, and the guy was coming towards me and he was going on and on and on. And I was like, well, you know, look, what if this guy comes back and he sues you, you know, and you have to answer for that? Well, you know, I'll be okay if, you know, because I know I have my morals and my values and I stood my ground. I did the right thing. So if I had to go to jail for that, I'm okay with that. And I was like, this fantasy that you are living in is insane to me. You know, and there's so many people who have that idea that, oh, you know, I'll just do, you know, I'm okay with getting shot, or I'm okay with getting in a shootout, or I'm okay with going to jail. And they don't really know what that's like. They don't really understand the reality of what that is going to take emotionally, what type of issues that's going to create for their family. They're just operating off of this kind of, you know, Superman on television shootout, you know, gun-toting, you know, hero who always wins at the end, and not realizing that this is a real thing with real life. And even if he had shot that guy and maybe the guy had a gun on him, he still has to live with that.
Yeah, that's a huge piece. And I tell a lot of folks this, we don't have a justice system, we have a legal system. And that's a really important, you know, distinction. And we call it a justice system, it is 100% a legal system about whose lawyer can argue what better. Mm. And when you make a decision to do something like that, you are now, you know, legally setting yourself up for a lot of problems. And you may think in the moment, hey, I'm going to be a hero because I defended my friend's property. Well, you know, what was going to happen at that property that is worth potentially losing your house, your life, your freedom, your family, your firearms forever if you're a felon, right? Yeah. Like, what is that thing that is going, that you imagine is happening, that is worth that? And those are distinctions you have to make ahead of time and be prepared for, so that you know what you're willing to risk it all for, because ultimately that's what you're doing every time you introduce a lethal weapon into a situation. You potentially are doing something that is going to be life-ending, whether it be, you know, physically life-ending or whether it be, you know, financially life-ending for somebody. And those are really, really important questions you want to ask yourself ahead of time and train for ahead of time. That's a phenomenal example.
And it goes back to what we were discussing before about the differences between reality and movies. You know, the misconceptions, because it's always seems to stop at that heroic moment, you know, if he did what he thought he needed to do and that person was, you know, their life had been over. And you know, the dad, you said the friend's dad comes and says, good job. And
high five.
And it's freeze frame. Yeah. You know, that's it. Yeah. All the consequences of that, you know, even if it was a good situation. And I think something we've talked about before is that when people get into those type of situations, even if someone attacks you, and you do use lethal force and you end their life, there are still emotional consequences that come with that.
Yeah, 1,000%.
So, Sean, okay, quick wrap, because I know we got to go. I'm interested on thinking about getting a firearm.
Sure.
My name is Joe Blow. I'm on the street. I'm thinking about it. I'm a law-abiding citizen. What steps should I take?
Yeah. Step one is find a range that teaches a basic intro to a pistol. And again, I'm assuming we're talking about a pistol right now. It could be a rifle if you want to hunt. But find a range that teaches a basic intro to pistol. Humble yourself enough going in there going, hey, I know I've seen a lot of movies, but I don't know anything. And go in there and learn the basics about firearms. And what I mean by that is before you even start shooting, learning, you know, fundamentals like grip and stance and trigger control and learning, you know, what a sight reticle is, or, you know, what all of these fundamental things that you should know about first. Once you've taken that class and you've had an experience to see it, touch it, smell it, you know, look at it, then you can start making educated decisions on what type of firearm to purchase. And then once you've purchased that firearm, the next step is you've got to get a lot of practice reps in with the specific firearm that you're planning on using, because everyone is just a little bit different. And understanding yours in the adrenal state when you only have split seconds to make decisions is going to be super important. And that's a huge piece. And then, you know, not to mention, you know, the equipment that goes with it, you know, holster considerations and where you carry your mags and all that. Those are all really important variables. So find somebody who's going to educate you on those things. Buy one that works for you. Don't assume it's a subcompact Glock. You know, find one that works for you. And then from there, go train with the one that you purchased. You want to train not just till you get it right, but till you can't get it wrong, because in the adrenal state is not the time to learn that you did not practice enough. And that's a huge distinction. And there's a tremendous amount of things you can do, you know, on your own at your house once you understand the fundamentals. You know, I'll leave you with this one, but, you know, just practicing my draw stroke, and probably like a lot of people, I get up in the morning and I watch the talking heads on the news, and I use those as a reference point, where every time the head changes on the TV, obviously clear your weapon first, make sure you've done everything safely. But every time I watch the head transition on the TV, that cues my draw stroke all the way through presentation shot. And then, you know, back to the holster. And, you know, so find something you can do dry fire that, you know, helps you get your morning reps in just like you would for anything else you want to be good at. Practice. And then you'll feel ready when it's time to use it.
Okay. Now, after that takes place, after I've purchased the weapon, I've gone to the range, I know the basic fundamentals, and I want advanced training, how do I contact you?
Yeah, great question. So you can find us at thecombatuniversity.com, all one word, or you can find us at 37PSR, and feel free to hop on there, look up our website, check out our range, learn anything you want to about us and our organization and what we do. We offer both in-person training, private lessons, advanced training, and then we have an online curriculum focused on all things firearms, not just firearms, but medical tasks and self-defense on the whole. But again, you can jump on there and check it out anytime. And then I'm sure you will see some of our stuff featured on the Survival University, Survive U. As you guys go through there, I'm sure you'll see some of our stuff. Hakeem's an amazing instructor and always putting the things that he's picking up to use to help you guys get better at what you're doing as you continue to prepare for whatever it is that you are preparing for.
Cool. What are you focused on these days? Give me one thing that's like the thing that you really like, that's your thing,
right? Yeah. All right. Well, from a training perspective right now is formalizing, structuring gunfighting into a martial arts discipline. That is my number one focus right now, is figuring out a way to take a person who knows nothing about guns, so we'll call the white belt, and getting them to a black belt level proficiency, and what are the steps that need to be inside of that curriculum. And that's really what we've been putting together, is understanding all the things that you need to know. And as you probably know, a horrible path to have set off on, because every time you open a crack in a door, you go, well, now I got to go peek around in this room for the next 10 hours. So one thing leads to another, and you keep going. Really enjoying the journey of, you know, discovery of all the things that, you know, I wish I had growing up to prepare me, and how do I capture those and turn them into something that somebody can take, pick up, and roll with to get them to a certain level of proficiency.
That's it for today. We will have Sean back to do another episode, so make sure that you guys are paying attention to that. Like he said, Combat University is his site, and you can find out all about him, and I guarantee you will not be disappointed. You will not be disappointed. Do not figure out that you are a glass ball when the bat is swinging at you. You want to be a baseball, because you can bounce back, right? And also become a homer. So let's end there. So with that being said, thank you for listening and building an education and preparation with us. Please remember, real survival is not about what you can do as an individual, but what we can do to empower those around us. Due to this, we ask that you share this podcast with your friends, and we always appreciate a review. In addition, if you are looking for training in the fields related to preparation, you can join us as well on our SurviveUniversity.com website, where our focus is to get ready, be ready, and stay ready. I'm Hakeem Isler, and I'm with the OG, Maine J, and Sean O'Dowd. We are out.
Have a great day, guys.